Thank you for joining us today for a message from the Word of God. What follows is a recording from one of our live services at Gooch Lane Church of Christ in Huntsville, Alabama. If you're ever in the area, we'd love to have you join us in person. And if you like what you hear today, you can visit us online at teachingtruth.org, where we have videos, weekly articles on biblical topics, information about our services, and more.
About a month ago, Pam and Jake Collins and Hallie Hall and I left for a trip to Malawi, and I want to thank the elders for allowing that to take place. And tonight, I want to share just a few things with you about it. You know, growing up hearing reports of this nature, many times you would see lots of faces on the screen, and you could tell that the person who's talking about it was really excited, but it's kind of hard to get excited when you didn't know those people. So what I'm going to try to do tonight, I will introduce some to you who, those of you who are members here, have known at least by name for some time. But what I'd like to do is just to give you kind of a general overview tonight of what the trip was like. This is the fourth one that Pam and I have been on, and they're all different, of course, but very similar in a lot of ways. And so I'll take you through that. I always like to begin these, though, just to give you a little bit of insight for people who may be hearing about this work for the first time. Malawi is a very small African nation, kind of down in the southeastern corner of the continent. You think about South Africa, just go a few hours north and you'll find it there near Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Zambia are the surrounding nations. But just to put it in perspective for you, the population of the state of Alabama as of last year was just a little over 5 million people. The population of Malawi, Africa is just over 20 million people. Keep that statistic in mind, because the square miles of Alabama is a little over 52,000. The square miles of Malawi is a little over 45,000. So take the state of Alabama, shrink it down just a little bit, put 22 million people in it and growing, and there you have the nation of Malawi. It is one of the world's poorest countries. Again, just a little bit of perspective on it. The GDP of Malawi for last year was $30 billion. The GDP for the state of Alabama was $206.9 billion. The GDP for the U.S. was $25.46 trillion. So you got a lot of people in a confined area who don't have a lot of money. Just a very impoverished nation. But that should not in any way cast any dispersion on the people there. You look at just your first observations, just your general observations, and it's a very happy people. You see a lot of folks laughing and enjoying each other. So that poverty, I think, probably impacts us more than them. Not realizing what it's like to be rich, they don't really realize what it's like to be poor. That's just the way of life. And for many of them, that doesn't hurt their view toward life at all. All right, so let me tell you just a few things about it. As I mentioned, this was our team this year. Pam and I were just really happy to have Jake. This is his second trip with us. And then Hallie Hall was able to go with us. And people would ask us, and I'd tell them, and they said, "Now, who is Hallie Hall?" And I would start, and then I would say, "Wait a minute. You know Bill Hall, don't you? It's his granddaughter." And for 95% of North Alabama people, that takes care of it. You don't have to explain. And for the other five, just say, "Her other grandfather was Huey Hartzell." And you get that down. Jake, of course, is working with us this summer. Those of you who are members here know him. But they were just a lot of fun to be around. They kept the trip really fun and entertaining, but also really hard workers. They didn't balk at anything we did. And I'll show you a couple of things that some might have balked at, but they were just troopers all the way. When we got to Malawi, our group expanded, as you know. And this picture is a picture of the people that we worked with the most. This was the group that was there with us for the whole time. the tall guy in the back with the Auburn jacket on, most of you know him. That's Larry Vinson. If you're visiting with us tonight, Larry Vinson was a longtime member here at Gooch Lane. And about 7 years ago, he made the decision to move to Malawi to work full-time in the preaching of the gospel. He had not been a full-time evangelist before then. He had preached some, but just kind of by appointment. But he had a good friend there who said to Larry, his name was James Nyando, and just a few days before James died, he and Larry were talking. And he said, "Larry, nobody ever comes to Malawi to work in the villages." And Larry kind of took that as a call to do his work there and made that decision to go over. And so that is a work. It's hard to believe that it's been going on 7 years now with him, but he's doing well. Larry had some knee trouble before he left. Unfortunately, that came back while he was there. So he's trying to get some of that taken care of. Yet, he's also, I don't know if he would want me to tell you this or not, so don't tell him I told you. He is currently working on his permanent visa for Malawi, so I don't think Larry has any intentions of coming home anytime soon. He's the man for the job there, and he's doing quite well. Let me identify a few of these others just because they have been mentioned several times, the first of which is this man on the front, Lazarus Ngaluwie. Lazarus is a preacher in Malawi, has been for a number of years. And his name may sound familiar to you because a couple of years ago, Lazarus was involved in a hit and run. Someone hit the motorcycle that he was driving. Guy was not going to stop, but some of the ones around got in the guy's way and made him stop. Unfortunately, Lazarus was never able to collect any kind of settlement for this wreck. It caused him a great deal of physical harm. He was taken to the hospital with major leg problems, and the hospital he was taken to made it worse. A couple of surgeries that really caused problems, and finally they said, "We just need to cut your leg off." And Larry said, "Hold on a minute. We're going to find a Western-trained doctor." Took him down to Blantyre, which is, this is not going to be exactly right, just to give you the point. It'd kind of be like their New York City. It's kind of the business town. And there were some doctors, I think, who had been trained maybe in Europe. And they said, "Oh, we can fix this." And so last year, Lazarus was doing better. But this year, he's back walking just exactly like the first time we met him. And I'm glad of that because Lazarus is a huge, valuable player in this work. He knows the country, he knows the people, and he helps to make a lot of the arrangements before Larry goes in to teach. The taller man standing in the back, Shadrach Nyando, is the brother of James, who I just mentioned. And over the years, Shad has become a very valuable part of this. He does all of the driving. He oftentimes goes with Lazarus into the villages to set things up, which I'll talk about here in just a minute. He's Larry's main interpreter, so he is an essential part. And from the time I've known him forward, it's just amazing the spiritual growth that's taken place. He has really grown into this job. Now, that being said, we arrived on Saturday. On Sunday, Shad found out that his aunt had passed away. And she and his family lived up in the northern part of the country. So he left us for a few days, which was kind of troubling in some ways, but that gave a really good opportunity for us to spend more time with Dr. Moses Combi. Pam and I had met him on our first trip, but we never had really spent a lot of time with him. So with Shad's departure, Moses stepped up and took over the driving and took over Larry's interpreting, and I really grew to appreciate him more. He has become, in the last two or three years, another essential part of this work. And again, he's got a lot of connections. His previous job was with the government, so he's got a lot of connections within the government and can really pull strings when things need to be done. And so I think he's doing a really, really good work there. We also found out he's really funny. So he kept us entertained for a whole lot of the trip with his stories and such. So we were happy to get to know him. Now, with Shad's departure, there was somebody new who came in who's just going to kind of blow our theme that we're building with Shadrach, Lazarus, and Moses. His name is Frank. So maybe if you saw Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, you could change it to frankincense and make it fit. But nonetheless, young man, about 25 years old, Moses called one of the local churches and said, "We need another interpreter. You got anybody?" And so Frank was just going to fill in till Lazarus got back, but he just kind of fell in love with the work. And so he was with us every day up until the very last day. And I got really tickled with him a time or two. They would have a little conversation before we would speak. And they would say, "Now, who's going to interpret for who?" And Frank would say, "I want Chandler. I can't understand anything Larry says." So for a Malawian trained in British-style English to hear a South Georgian American talk, that was something he wasn't quite ready for. First day, it didn't go just as smoothly as any of us would have liked, but the second day, he got it down pat. And usually there would just be maybe once, sometimes none at all, where I'd have to stop and kind of explain what I meant to him. So I hope he's going to stick with this. I think he'll be a really, really good addition. And then this young man, his name is Precious. And if you heard the report last year, Precious was baptized during our trip last year. He was hired as a driver, and he sat through the sermons, and about halfway through, he decided he wanted to become a Christian. I credit all of that to God. I credit some of it to Jake. Jake and he really hit it off. Several years difference between them, though it really doesn't look like it. But they grew very, very close, and that relationship grew even closer this year. So we were happy for him to come back in. He did a lot of the driving for Lazarus during the trip. So that's our group. That's who we stayed with most of the time. Let me talk about our first day, and then I'll not do a day by day. Although I started to say this, I think between Jake and Hallie, we had something like 2,000 pictures, something like that. So I started to begin this by saying, so sometime 1 or 2 a.m. tomorrow morning, we ought to be wrapping up with this. But I've kind of narrowed it down a bit. I do want to give them credit, though, because almost all of these pictures are theirs. Pam and I just kind of sat back and said, we'll use what y'all take. This was the first day at the Area 47 church. I would describe this as a city church. This is in downtown La Longue Way. But what they had done is invited several of the other churches to attend. So they moved everything outside. They had four or five tents set up. I don't know that I ever heard a count. I would say probably in the neighborhood of 500 people or so were present that day. And a lot of English speakers here. In fact, this is the church where each week Larry does an English service. He goes in and he teaches. And so a number of them come. They asked me to speak that day. There was another American in town that they had some dealings with, so I think that's why they invited everybody in. So he preached and I preached, and I don't know that I could say Pam and Hallie were asked to teach. It was expected they were going to. And I meant to check earlier, 80 kids, was that right? Something like that. Yeah, they had around 80 kids for 2 hours. So next time your class seems bad, ladies, just remember that. This was an interesting day, very atypical, though. I mean, you go here, a lot of the things are reminiscent of what you would expect in the United States, especially when you go to that English service. Last year, I thought it was an odd experience that I was sitting in the Long Way, Malawi, singing Bringing in the Sheaves. But nonetheless, it does kind of mimic ours more. Then, though, when you leave the city of La Longue Way and get into the villages, that's really where things begin to change. And this is where Larry spends the majority of his time. He'll teach that morning class, but then he's probably heading out to one of these villages. Some days he doesn't teach that English class and will spend time out in the villages. The way this works is very interesting, the system of how it operates. What Larry will do is he'll send Shad, Lazarus, and sometimes Moses to the village ahead of time. And they'll do two things. They'll talk to the Christians in that village. A lot of times there will be a small church building there. They'll meet with the elders. Most of these churches have elders and preachers. They'll meet with them. And they'll set up a time for them to come in, for Larry to come in and teach. And then when we're there, to do that also. And what those elders will then do is they'll send the word out to churches that are maybe within walking distance. And a lot of times they'll say, you got to limit the number of people you bring. You can bring, they'll say, maybe two representatives and wives to come. So you'll have then, when we're there anyway, a group of people who are elders, elders' wives, preachers. And the idea is we teach them, they then take that back to their churches, which is a good way of doing it. Now, there are times when Larry will go in with a more of an evangelistic perspective. We didn't do that any. Well, maybe one day during our trip there. But he'll oftentimes do that, and that church then who's in that village will invite the friends, and you'll see here in just a minute how many oftentimes will come to that. Now, let me get back to the story here. So they'll go in, they'll talk to the elders, preachers, get all that arranged, but then they have to visit the village chief. It's just so foreign to us, isn't it? But within every village, this is a very structured society. And if you get the chief's blessing, he'll make sure you don't have any trouble. He'll make sure that there's no problems there. In fact, most of the time, the chief will attend at least a part of the service. And I think Larry told me that he's baptized 6 or 8 of those village chiefs as in his time there. Some things are universal. It's in Malawi, it's called you got to give the chief a chicken. And what that means is you give a gift. And that gets your good favor. They'll come in then. They'll make all of this work. And the things will go smoothly then, usually. In our 4 trips, we've never been to the same group of people. It's always been different. This trip, we went in, and to say some villages are more remote than others is somewhat of a strange statement. But if you can see the picture right in the middle, I took this one because this was one of the most remote villages we'd gone in. All of the roofs were still thatched. You didn't see any metal roofs. And a lot of times the buildings in the more remote are round. They build them circular, and they had several of these. Any case, very, very nice people that were there. And we enjoyed our time in all of these villages. So let me just kind of show you a few of the things that we did. Jake put this together for me. If you look right in the middle where the A is, that's the long way. And so we're, all these little trips, we're doing that each day. So our longest ones, we would drive 3 hours, 3.5 hours there, teach in the afternoon, and then drive back. Some of them a little shorter than that, but I don't think any of the ones that we went into were less than 1.5 hour drive. So that's 1.5 hours to 3.5 hours, as long as nothing unexpected happens. So if you look at this little red car, this is a bad picture to show to say what I'm about to say. Some of you in this room bought that car. You paid for that. When Lazarus had his wreck and his motorbike was messed up, your contributions went toward that. This village was one of the longest in distance that we had gone to. And while we were there, someone told Lazarus and Precious, who was driving, there's a shortcut. There's a shortcut. It'll cut 2 hours off your trip. Probably about 30 minutes down this road, we realized they should have listened to the chief of the village who said, you'll never get that car down the road. And so we came to this, what you can see on the screen here, and sure enough, it stuck tight. And you do the typical thing of spinning the wheels to make it much worse, and it was stuck. And so we were there for a couple of hours until enough Malawians stopped, and they pretty much just lifted the car up and turned it around and set it on the road. at which point it wouldn't start. And so Larry's truck was backed down in front of it. They found a string, tied it together. We would pull it. The string would break, retie, pull it. Until finally it was brought to a village where it could be left to be worked on the next day. Count your blessings, right? It's one of the most beautiful sunsets I've ever seen in my life. Out in the middle of nowhere, we saw the stars without any lights whatsoever around us. So it was nice from that regard. The next day, Larry decided to rent a vehicle to take us back up there, at which point his truck began to overheat. And this is one of my favorite pictures. This is Precious sitting up in the motor of the truck trying to fix it. So anyway, that was a long, long day. As I said, Jake and Hallie, they were troopers through all this, kept it light, kept it enjoyable. But nonetheless, when you're in a country that barely has a road system, those kinds of things are going to happen. So when you do finally make it to the village, this is kind of the typical day. You'll arrive either late morning or early afternoon, get up, drive, you know, 2 or 3, 4 hours to get there. And they're waiting, usually singing. Many of them have gathered hours in advance. Fine when you're delayed. They're not going anywhere. And so the way that it usually works on the trips that I go on, there's going to be 3 sermons preached. And Larry and I just kind of took turns with this. Sometimes he would preach too. Sometimes I would preach too. But the interesting thing is the people there will sit and listen as long as you'll speak. And there have been a couple of occasions where they got a little irritated with us because we quit too soon. That is a very un-American experience. I can assure you with that. So there's 2 or 3 sermons that are presented. Then there will be a break with the men and women dividing. And so Hallie and Pam would sometimes be teaching women, sometimes women and children. In past trips, Pam's taught just children. I don't know that we had any of that happen this time. And we let Jake then teach the men's classes each time, and that worked out well. So what happens is one group stays in the building, one group goes outside. And on this trip, oddly enough, the men always went outside. That was a very unusual thing. Previous trips, usually it's just the opposite, but that worked out much, much better. And so a lot of times these sermons are going to be geared to think about, okay, I'm talking to a number of elders, number of preachers that are going to take this back. What would be things that would be very helpful to them? Larry almost always is highly doctrinal in his lessons. And so I'll try to balance that a bit by doing a few more practical kind of Christian living lessons. Sometimes that's not the case, and I'll do the doctrinal ones, but we want to get a good blend of what's going on. And so for most every day of the trip, that's what we were doing. The villages, as I mentioned, will have a church building of some kind there. Some of them fairly nice, some of them barely standing. Just depends on how much money has been sent for the village there. On our trip, the attendance ranged anywhere from 50, that would be the smallest, up to about 325. That was the count at the picture that you see on the screen here. I am suspect of that number. I think there were a lot more there. And at times you begin to wonder just how many people can squeeze into a building. And that was the case. This village, we went on 2 days with a day between them. And so on that second day, they had invited many more people to come. And so, I mean, the numbers swelled with a lot of people present there, all the kids on the front rows. And they all fell in love with Hallie Hall. And throughout the sermons, they were inching closer to her and closer to her until finally one of the men came over and scattered them all back again, at which point we started the whole process again. So they would look at her and smile at her and want to be close to her. So she was a big hit with the kids there. Now, let me tell you about a couple of atypical days. While we were there, there was a gospel meeting that was scheduled. And so this took place during an afternoon of one day and the morning of the next day. So the scenes that you see here are from the afternoon. There were three sermons that were done. We could have given as many as we wanted. You have to stop, though, in consideration of people have got to walk home, and you don't want people walking home in the dark. So you would end in enough time for most people to get home. So on this day, it was a fairly small crowd. I would say 75, counting roosters and chickens and everything else that's walking around while you're preaching there. But they said, come back tomorrow, and things will be different. So we came back tomorrow, and the 75 had swelled to 732. So during the night, people had traveled in from lots of different areas. There were at least five sermons that morning. Larry preached, I preached. There were some native Malawians who preached. And so I told Moses afterwards, I said, this is just like our gospel meetings, except we do it for an entire week. We don't cram it all into 2 days. But nonetheless, very, very encouraging. Lots of Christians there and seemed very responsive to the message that we gave. Now, something happened a bit unusual during this particular gospel meeting. It was attended by the tribal chief. That's not unusual, arriving in the middle of the sermon. So here I am preaching away, and suddenly you'll have to take 732 times 2. That many eyes start looking over in the other direction, because that's when the chief and her entourage arrived. She is the one right here in the middle. Now, I might just mention this about the structure of it. You've got a village chief, and then you've kind of got a regional chief, and then you have a tribal chief. And I have met the village chiefs before and the regional. This, I think, is the first tribal chief that I have ever met. And to kind of think about it, you've got two tiers of government. You've got the village government, and then you've got the elected government over the nation. She would be the one next in line to the elected government. So she is a very important lady. These tribal chiefs exercise a good deal of power. In this picture, standing beside her is her husband, who I think may be Billy D. Williams, I'm not sure. Then you've got her attendants here. They traveled with her. And then this gentleman was our interpreter during the meeting. And then, of course, you see the rest of us pictured there with her. Anyway, we had lunch with her, which was odd, because the language barrier there, but we made the best of it. She was very nice, very encouraging, thanked us for the message, thanked us for presenting the truth, and invited us next time we're there to come and eat with her. And so we plan to do that, hopefully, and maybe get to know her better. So that's kind of an unusual thing. Gospel meetings, really big. They'll rent out a school. They'll set up on the grounds of the school, and Christians from everywhere will come in to that meeting. So one other atypical day that I want to tell you about. This was the last day of our time there, so we had pretty much finished up all of our teaching. But there was a village up to the north, over very close to the Zambia side, and they have just experienced phenomenal growth. Greatly outgrown their building. So this is their current building, and you can see how full it is. They are about to begin a new building. There is a couple here in the United States. I'll not mention that name. They want it kept private. But they have said they're going to finance this building. They're going to pay for it. And that's been not an uncommon thing that Americans will, that Larry knows, will quietly say, we just want to build this building for these people. And that's going on here. So it's good. This was, I think, by far the friendliest village we have ever visited. They were so welcoming. And so I said, now, Larry, is there anything expected of me? He said, no, nothing at all. We're just going to go. I'm going to get up. I'm going to say a few things and 20 minutes or so, and that'll be that. So he did that. And then Moses also spoke, as well known in this area. And then they said, we don't know this one. They were pointing to me. They said, we want to hear the gospel from him. So fortunately, I had told Pam, I said, I'm taking my Bible just in case. And so I very quickly came up with about a 20-minute sermon that day and talked about the house of God in its truest sense and how we make up that house. And they seemed very appreciative for all of us being there, but we're not quite done yet. Because what do you do at a groundbreaking? Well, I don't know why we were expected to do this, but nothing doing but that we were going to break the ground. So here we are. I think it was just a way of making fun of us, just to be quite honest with you. Here we're handed this antique Malawian hoe, and they say, dig a hole. And so we did that. Anyway, they got a really big laugh out of it, and we did too. But I am very much looking forward, if I get to go back, to visiting this village again. Because I think there's big things going on here. They're very evangelistic, very excited about the gospel. Even that day had invited a lot of their neighbors in for it. So it was a great trip. I don't want anybody to ever think that there's not anything entertaining on this trip. When you've got Jake Collins along, there's going to be entertainment. I told him I was doing this slide, and the hardest part was picking out which picture of him I wanted to put on here. But anyway, just a good time, and I'll mention this to you. When you have your birthday in Malawi, it's a great thing because you know who makes the cake for you, right? So Larry had this nice cake for us. Anyway, really, really good trip. I think of the four we've taken, this was our very best one. Just the response that we got, the encouragement of seeing this effort growing, of seeing how Larry's work has coalesced, how he's got this plan, and that plan is very much accomplishing a great number of things. Before I close off the report, I want to update you just a bit on the flooding relief. Many of you have participated in this. If you'll remember, Typhoon Freddy passed over Malawi, and it did a little bit of damage. However, then the outer band of the typhoon passed over again and decided just to sit down on Malawi for a while. So there was a huge amount of flooding in the southern region. We came to one village that had experienced just a bit. David Dunaway is going over here in a couple of weeks, and I think the plan is he's going to go down into some of those southern villages, so he'll probably be able to even share a little bit more than I can with this. However, we mentioned that there was a great need. Many of the Christians there had suffered during this, and so Larry put out the call that I sent on to many of you that you answered very generously. So let me just briefly wrap this up, that basically there's been three phases of this, or there will be three phases. Phase number one was to get food and medical supplies to the flood-impacted Christians. Many of these people lost everything. Houses, many of the farmers lost their fields. They had to go and live in school buildings and places set up by friendly governments that had sent some relief things in. That particular phase, by your generosity and by the generosity of several other Americans who my email was forwarded to, raised $100,000. I mean, that was in a matter of, I think, 7 to 10 days that $100,000 was sent. That money has largely been spent. Those of you who know Larry know how meticulous he is. He's put all of this money in the hands of a certified public accountant who's a Christian there to make an accounting of where every penny of it is being spent. And he plans on sharing that. This particular gentleman has been out of the country on business quite a bit, so he's hoping to get that done this week. But just kind of thinking through it, Larry says he thinks that all but maybe a couple of thousand have gone to buying the food, getting the people kind of over this first hurdle. Now, the second phase of this is to try to get seed and fertilizer to the Christians in the southern area so that maybe they can get a crop in this year, that they can replant quickly, get a crop in before the rainy season comes again in November. And so that's what he's working on right now. That is a difficult thing. There's been a lot of price gouging that's gone on with that. Seed prices, fertilizer prices have shot way up. But he told me by email that I think Lazarus and Chad have just gotten back from a trip to try to assess where that particular part of it is. So that phase is in progress. And then phase three is going to be repairing church buildings that sustained damage, replacing Bibles and songbooks that were washed away and all of that, homes for Christians that were washed away. He's wanting to get all of that done as well. So that's on the horizon. A lot of that is going to depend on how much relief money continues to come in. So what I'm about to tell you, I don't tell you this to say, now we need to get busy and we need to give more. You have given tremendously. But many of you have said, what still needs to be done? And so I want to show you that just very quickly, what's left, what phase three is going to look like. And if you're of a mind to help, I can assure you the money is going to go where you intend it to go, and it's going to be spent in the way you intend for it to be spent. So here are a few of the things that are still in need. These pictures I just pulled off the web to give you an idea of how bad these areas were. In talking with Larry, he said that they have given out about 1,300 native language Bibles. And he says, at a minimum, they're going to need that many more. So we're talking 1,300 Bibles that are in the Chichewa language. These are about $15 per Bible by our standards. That's pretty cheap to be able to get these. So that's a big need. Also, I don't know how many songbooks are going to need to be replaced, but I would say it would be in the hundreds, if not up to 1,000 of those. Since many of them were also taken away. Those are going to be around $10 to replace them. As far as he knows, there's three church buildings that they lost their roofs. These buildings have a metal roof on them. And so when the winds come in, it'll oftentimes pick up the metal and the wooden rafters and just lift them off of the brick building. So he's looking at this from worst case scenario, that the wood, rafters, the tin, everything would have to be replaced. And that would be about $1,000 to do that per church building. So that's part of the need. As far as he knows, there's 12 Christian families who totally lost their homes. I don't know how much this would cost. If you're interested in finding out a number on that, I can get with Larry, or you can get with Larry and find that out. But that's part of this future plan also. The seed for replanting is about $1.50 per pound. And these are typically in 50, 60-pound bags that they come in. As I mentioned to you, there's been a lot of price gouging that's gone on with that. Nonetheless, you got to do what you got to do. And so that would be the cost. And then the fertilizer for a 100-pound bag is about $100 to $120 a bag. 1 pound covers 2 acres. Most of these farmers have 10 to 15 acre tracts, just to give you an idea of the price that they would need to take over and to replant their crop. I'll mention to you that over and over we heard how thankful they are. And it's so interesting that you can't understand anything in a prayer until you hear someone say Hughes Road. You get that pretty loud and clear. And so there are a lot of Christians in Malawi who have and are praying for you. And they are just so, so thankful for the work that's been done. We don't do anything for our own glory. However, when we can demonstrate a spirit of generosity toward people who we've never met, that makes a really good impression for the people of God, for the family of God, in showing this is how it needs to be. And that's what's gone on in this country. So let me just publicly thank all of you who were just so generous. I kidded with Stephen. I would say, no, Steve, this was toward the end of our collection. I'd say, no checks for you today. And then by the end of the service, I'd have to say, I must revise my answer and hand him 2 or 3 checks for several weeks. Many of you just handing money for that work. I'll remind you that if you do want to contribute on your own privately, Larry has set up the Malawi Working Fund. That's an easy way to get the money to him. Also, it's set up as a nonprofit, so there is a tax advantage for that when you give privately. But unlike anything like that, you designate. You can put on your check, I want this going for seed, I want this going for songbooks, whatever. And that's exactly what it's going to go for. So thank you again for all of the generosity that you've shown. So that's a brief wrap-up of what the trip entailed. Hallie's with us tonight. I would be happy for you to talk with her, to get her impressions on it. Pam, also, I'd like for you to talk to her. They can give you some things that I was not able to see as they were teaching while I was teaching at the same time. So I think you would find that interesting. As we close this evening, I want to go just for a minute over to Matthew chapter 28. I've often wondered what was going through the apostles' minds at so many times. And here Jesus is about to leave, and he's saying, everything's been accomplished that I came to do. And so in verse 18 he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. And then he gives the word, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. Their lives were about to take a dramatic change, even from the three previous years. They were about to give up everything they knew and go. And I'm so glad that there are people who still do that today. I'm so thankful for men like Larry who take this to heart. But you don't have to move 7,000 miles away to fulfill this. The world is next door, just as much as it's 7,000 miles away. And I hope that when we hear things, as I've shown you, as I've spoke to you this evening, to encourage us about places throughout the world where the gospel is having an amazing impact, we don't give up here. We realize there are people here who very much can benefit from that gospel message. And so I encourage all of us that we're vigilant in looking for those people and taking the opportunities to teach as we can. But maybe this evening there's some even in our midst who are ready to take advantage of that opportunity. That just like those 7,000 or so that Larry has seen baptized in his work there, you can be baptized for the same reason. You can be baptized into the same family. You can have your sins washed away just as they did. And you can be a part of this family that will never meet on this side of eternity, but will meet one day to be together forever, to have no language barriers, no culture barriers, but to just simply enjoy the blessings of eternity that God has promised. This evening, if you're ready to become a Christian, I encourage you to do that as we stand and sing together.
Thanks again for joining us today. If you have questions about anything you heard today or anything Bible-related, you can use the contact form on our website at teachingtruth.org to submit a question and someone will be in touch. There's also lots of other great Bible content on our site as well. The web address again is teachingtruth.org. Once again, thanks for listening, and we hope to see you in person soon.